seeking collaborations with influential people? At GZPR, we create passion-fueled collaborations that go beyond traditional representation. A performance agency that onboards new clients every month. Our focus is on POC collaborations. Contact us now at hellogzpr.com, a self-aware public relations agency exploring world perspectives with leading talents. Hello and welcome. My name is Tiffany Farag and welcome to Get to Know You, a podcast for those who want to open conversations and access deeper dialogue, where conversations can become stronger when we explore our thinking and behavior. Every Tuesday, a new question will be asked to a guest speaker, genuine everyday people here to have insightful conversations. Now we're welcoming back Lee Chambers to the episode. So great to have him back on the podcast. If you remember, Brent is an environmental psychologist, a well-being consultant, and the founder of Essentialized Workplace Wellbeing. So glad to have you back on the podcast, Lee.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing to be returning again.
So good. So since we last spoke, you've also started a radio show. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so I now run the Health and Wellbeing Show on Ribble FM here in the UK. And we broadcast out across the north. And really, it's an hour on a Monday afternoon. That's really, the idea is that for many people, Monday is the start of the week. They might start either dreading it or have that all the energy after weekend. And then by Monday afternoon, start to feel that slump where so often we do kind of feel, and we are polyphasic. We're designed to sleep in the afternoons, and people hit that point. So I've said, you know what, I'm going to run a show to inject positivity, some actionable advice, some insight, a little bit of story, and just a little bit of joy with some positive, happy music, utilizing, you know, our senses to actually listen and just feel that bit more energized. And I get different guests on who run different modalities and simply ask them questions and drag some insight out of them that the audience can then use.
Fantastic. That sounds incredible. Like, absolutely right. Monday mornings, everyone's like, oh, it's Monday, you know, until you get into the momentum of things, and Wednesday comes along, you're like, okay, I'm halfway there, I can get out of it. But that Monday morning, we're almost all of us are dreading. I think more people nowadays are trying to take Monday off. Like, they're trying to, you know, or like having that Monday off and starting a Tuesday, I think, gives people more energy for some reason. I'm not sure quite why the mentality behind it. But now there's these four day work weeks that are starting, and people are trying to get the Monday off.
Yeah, it's very psychological. Monday's always the start, and people just feel like, you know, it's that Monday. It's Monday, just doesn't, poor Monday gets a really bad rep.
Absolutely.
It's the start. It's the start of school. It's the start of work, and it's the start of ultimately the week in terms of the calendar that we've decided to create as human beings. Like, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, your typical human being that long ago was like, Monday? What's Monday? I just live.
Exactly. We've created this whole time thing, the 24 hours, the Monday, the 7 day work weeks, all of these things. It's so interesting how, you know, I was reading something the other day, and it was saying that, you know, if humans weren't on this planet, the trees, the plants, the animals wouldn't know what time it is, what day it is, what hour it is. They'd just be like, what's time? You know, it's so interesting that we've created, we needed to create this.
Well, what's amazing is obviously the ancient civilizations utilized the sun to kind of give us a reference point in the day. Mm. What's really interesting is the Romans didn't actually use a 24-hour system like we do. They actually changed the hours on depending on the seasons. So in the summer, their hours would stretch out to 120 minutes. But in the winter, they'd reduce their hours down to 40 minutes. So they always had the same amount of hours, no matter when the sun set and when the sun rose.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Really clever.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think that's why, you know, back in, I think they were looking at the history, and that they used to say that, it wasn't actually 24 hours. It was 24 hours 0.0001. And so calculating things in the future or the or past were, it's, you know, we're working with altering the time, which is so interesting.
Yeah, it's just funny to think that really that would help people become more consistent if they had 12 hours of sunlight rather than so many minutes, because our days shift so much, even especially in the, depending on where you are on the globe, you might have, you know, the closer you get up towards the north and the south, your days shorten significantly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, some countries we've got 6 months of the year's light and 6 months of the year's day, and other countries too. They don't really have like a, you know, starting on a Monday. Like some people start on a Tuesday, or they've got their weekends are on a Friday or on a Thursday. And it's so interesting around the globe when different days are, or hours are considered, and time itself, like however it's perceived everywhere, you know, around the globe.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And I think that's that thing. If you go out to some traditional cultures, you'll find that they don't even anchor into it in that way. Just for them, it's just another day.
It's exactly. Like I'd like to go sit with, like, you know, the different tribal cultures. They just don't have time. Is like, we don't use time. We don't, what is time? It's just a super,
Tell you one thing though, Tiff. One thing that doesn't change is the seasons.
The seasons, yeah. I like that. We should really move into that. A friend of mine actually, she asked this question on her page, and she was talking about this, and she's like, "What season are you in?" And I thought that was such a great question.
Yeah, because the truth is, our lives run cyclical like a season. Like, you're going to have times when you feel like you're in the summer, and everything's just warm and it's working and it's brighter. And you're going to have times when you feel like you're in the winter. And you're going to have times when you feel like you're in the spring and you're gradually growing. And you're going to sometimes feel like you're in the fall, in autumn, and things are starting to fade away a little bit. And I suppose that is the beauty of life. We are just part of nature's cycle. And we don't listen to that and honor that as much as we should do as human beings.
Absolutely. Yeah, that needs to be more of the question now. It's not, you know, that's perfect. I like how you just broke that down. And I think, you know, there's been a big chunk of this year where we've been in the winter kind of season, people trying to be, you know, either hibernate or trying to work around it and come up with different, I think, tasks or activities to kind of put them in the summer season, I think, you know, to get them the headspace in that summery kind of feel as best as they can. So in saying that, actually really kind of builds like a nice little foundation there for us to dive into the question. So I really like this question. I really, really want to dive into it and see how we can, you know, best apply it. So the question, listeners, is how can we embed well-being in all aspects of our life? Now, Lee, do you really think that this is possible?
So, you know where I come from, where the potentialities and opportunities are always there for us to look at things a little bit differently, to disrupt the status quo and not to put limits and boundaries on ourselves. And I honestly believe that well-being can be threaded through all processes in our lives. And the beauty is that when seeing other structures that have done something similar, it's possible. It just does require a certain element of seeing things a different way and starting to build things for yourself, but also frameworks for the future to do a similar thing. Because like we just said then, the human beings have been here in this kind of psychological and physiological form for 230,000 years. Yet we talk about 100 years ago like it was the start of man, when really it's like 0.001% away from where we are today.
Exactly.
And that just shows how much we can evolve if guided in a way, and how really our well-being as humans is only something that we started to try and anchor in on and turn into something more tangible in recent times. Because there was a point in time where we were prey, we were struggling to survive, and you did look after your well-being because it was paramount. Don't look after yourself, not going to survive. And all of a sudden, that danger has been gradually dissolved. And suddenly, well-being is not something that you need to survive. It's no longer survival of the fittest, survival of the one who's kept himself or herself well. It's now you can exist in a suboptimal state and you will be, generally speaking, fine to exist that way. But the deeper and bigger and wider you go over time, you realize that if you're not well, then you struggle to really actualize that potential. You struggle to feel and understand and really channel fulfillment in life. And that actually being well is a platform for us to do so much more and really starting to look at ways we can build little elements into our lives to be as well as we can in a world that doesn't necessarily promote us being well as human beings.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's self-awareness.
Yeah, exactly. What we're promoted to do, like nowadays, I think it's just most recently where there is such a strong focus on, or maybe less the last, 30 years on like mental health and well-being. It hasn't been something that has come to the, the forefront of things, 20 or 30 years ago. It wasn't such predominant, and people aren't speaking about or promoting or trying to get involved in it as they are now. And I think, what seems to be the main thing is that, people are focusing on, say, like meditation as to gain well-being and exercise and eat and things like this. But I guess, what we were discussing this before is that we tend to have like say, oh, I'm going to meditate for half an hour. And then that's my half an hour of well-being.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go back running into my life. I'm going to start chasing this, doing that. I'm like, well, me meditating for half an hour and then running around again for the rest of the time plus sleep, am I really focusing on my well-being? Is well-being really part of my life?
Yeah. So the interesting thing there, Tiff, is that when we actually look at well-being and we go beyond the platitudes and a lot of what people think, it actually comes down to our everyday actions. It comes down to our identity as human beings. And ultimately, the activities that we carry out under the banner of well-being, that's not actually well-being, so to speak. Well-being is ultimately the feeling of being well. And when we actually start to look, a lot of people try to shoehorn a well-being activity into a life that isn't promoting well-being. And it's like trying to build a house without building the foundations. So the foundations for well-being start with you becoming more self-aware. And that self-awareness expands for you to start to understand that you can't just bring in well-being and import it. It starts internally. And because it starts internally, when you start to cultivate your emotional intelligence, you start to understand your emotions, your feelings, your actions, your thoughts a little bit more. And that helps you become more well because you've got that understanding of how to express those healthily.
I've got to get, for example, the kids ready for school and like cultivating what would you say is a good frame of mind to going about, you've got kids like to go about not rushing around chasing, trying to get them ready, trying to take them to school.
So it's looking at in that situation, it's probably a time limited situation.
Yeah.
Most of us are traveling at such speed in modern life that we become stressed. We start to shout. And what you realize is I face that challenge every morning with my two, getting them ready. I did this morning. And it's very much a case of if you lose your patience, they will also lose their patience. And what it actually requires you to do is just to step back and realize that to effectively get them ready, get yourself ready, and live this functional life, you need to connect with them. And that connection requires you to step back from those initial feelings of, I'm in a rush. They're not doing what I'm asking them to do. And if you step back and just realize, okay, take a second, just take a breath. Right, got 20 minutes. What needs to be done? And it's that kind of understanding where all of a sudden, shouting and running around, you start to forget things. Human beings are great, but not if you catalyze stress as a negative. If you become stressed and that then diminishes your connection, all of a sudden you start to fly off the hook, you start to forget what you need to do, and you'll probably get out of the house realizing that you forgot one lunchbox, half the stuff you needed for work, and one of your children's got the t-shirts on the wrong way. And it's
sure. Taking that kind of, you know, I think moving slower will actually make you move more efficiently. Taking a breather will make you move more efficiently. That's more well-being. Like, hey, let's make this, you know, you can create it, make it fun. How about let's just breathe. Let's just slowly move into this together and breathe, or kind of trying to create a, you know, don't make the kids rush, because making the kids rush makes everything, it's too much going on. There's too much stimulation.
Yeah. So you kind of, and we've just described it then, how time is a human construct. What we're doing in that situation is we're feeling a pressure that's based on time. Now, the thing is, and over the past, I don't know, 40 years, time management has become this thing. You know, let's manage our time. If we manage our time, we'll get more done. We'll get it done. We'll get it organized. We'll get it straight. And what that actually does is it creates an unnecessary level of stress. It's always useful to schedule tasks in and to try and pick time blocks to do things in an efficient way. But it's become to the point where in modern life, yeah, we have a socially defined wake-up time and a socially defined time to get children into education, to get ourselves to work. That's understandable. But ultimately, have you prepared enough time? Are you looking after yourself enough to give yourself enough time? Because so often that situation that you describe in the morning has been facilitated by you deciding you're going to sit down and watch Netflix and put your entertainment before your well-being. You probably should have gone to bed an hour earlier, and then you would have got up a little bit earlier and a little bit more clear of mind. And the thing about time management is, and I say this to my clients a lot, time management is a bit redundant. Can't really manage time. Time is time. It's going to be there.
Yeah,
you can plan, but time management doesn't, it's not very flexible. It's not understanding that, generally speaking, it just doesn't go to plan. Like, I have just jumped on with you and I'm a few minutes late. And old me would have been like, ah! But I just sent you a message, took a breath, and here we are. And I said that it's not time management that you really need to look at in those situations if you want to promote your well-being. What you really want to start to do if you want to promote your well-being is look at attention management and energy management. And they are absolutely vital, because if we can put our attention where we want to, that is the sign of a well human being, where we have autonomy and control over where we put our attention. Because then what we consume, both in terms of what we eat, what goes into our minds, the choices that we make, the decisions, the way we act and connect, if you do it with attention, with presence, and with intention, then all of a sudden you are a well human being, because humans love having control over those things. But we live in a world where our attention is everywhere, being taken away. The attention economy, media, social media, entertainment, it's worth $7 trillion. That's how much it's worth to pull you away from you.
Yeah.
So often. And attention is like a muscle. You have to train it. If you allow yourself to be bombarded, stimulation, inputs everywhere, and just have that all day, we have more stimulation now in a day than our ancestors had in a lifetime.
And hence probably why they had a better well-being.
Yeah. It's because they were focused on the few things that mattered, making sure that they were fed, that they were safe, that they connected with other human beings, and ultimately that they lived in a way that was congruent to the times that were coming. And
do you think then, in saying that, that the main problem nowadays is people are connecting less with each other, and that's probably what's not allowing a better well-being? Like you said, you were focused on, instead of the time and what happened there, you were like, hey, Tiff, you just connected with me. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And that, because of that connection and that attention you put with another person, instead of, you know, staying in your own head about, oh, shit, I didn't, you know, go exactly on time, that is where our well-being is best served. Like, if we're able, like, it's through the connecting with the people around us who we're giving our time to and our attention to. It's like, you know, foster those connections, will be fostering your well-being.
Yeah, so connection is vital to well-being. I think the barriers that we face in modern life are how busy has become, you know, synonymous, how wealth, so figurative quantitative measures, are how we measure things. So, you know, wealth and health and all that kind of thing. But truth is, can't really put quantitative figures on health in that same way. No. Not in terms of value. And then we just have a lot in this world around that kind of internalization, consumption, not really appreciating so often that it all starts inside of us.
Yeah, and exactly.
We don't get the time to reflect when we're too busy. And that then leads us to just really run and realize that so often we're running in the wrong direction, not on the journey we want to take. And no. We're running further and further away from where we actually want to go.
It's making me think too, is like, you know, we've scheduled a time right now to do this podcast and that, but you're giving me, it's calm. You're giving me your attention. I'm giving you my full attention, even though I'm sure I've got other things scheduled after this, and so have you. But because I'm not thinking about that, I'm not trying to rush this, I'm giving you my full attention. That already is like enhancing my well-being. It's making me feel energized. It's making me feel, you know, in my way of impactful. As well, yeah. Like, you know, I'm impacting this conversation right now. You're impacting this conversation. We're not trying to just go, hurry it. You know, when you're trying to connect with people, even though we've all got different things that we need to do next, but they're not actually present with you. They're not engaged. They're like, they might be present. They might be talking, but they're just, you could see someone who's like, oh, I've got this other thing I need to do next.
Yeah.
And that's preventing our well-being, I would say.
Yeah. So here in this situation, we've had the intention, so we've booked it in. Intention is important. And then we've got the presence, because we are both here with the intention to have a conversation and we're both fully present. And what that does is, really, presence is charisma. And that charisma allows people to connect and actually does energize people together.
Because I like that a lot. Presence is charisma.
Exactly. We're a ball of energy at the end of the day, and you know, you want to be able to utilize your sound waves and bounce them off something that absorbs them sound waves and then sends them back, and you re-energize each other. It's like wireless charging.
Yes, I love that so much. Absolutely. People don't tend to think about that. We're all vibrating, like you said, it's at different frequencies. And we can, if you're vibrating at a higher frequency, you're able to make more of an impact on others. And being at a high frequency means being, you know, grateful, being centered, being at peace, focusing on your well-being will actually increases your frequency.
Yeah, definitely. And it's that kind of, so always important to remember that ultimately from a well-being perspective, it really starts with your basic needs being met. And when we're in that position, because so many of us are now in that position, our basic needs are met. You know, we are fed, we are watered, we are sheltered. We're not fighting for those things more often than not, especially out in the Western world. And the truth be told, then our well-being starts to move up that Maslow's hierarchy of how we're going to, you know, fulfill our potential and feel this movement, this progress throughout life. And that in itself is well-being. Achievement is a massive part of well-being. Connection is a massive part of well-being. And what people don't start to see and people start to forget is well-being suddenly becomes this person doing yoga.
That's right. That's what they keep considering, yeah.
And it starts so much further down in the principles of you being a good human being. And you'll not find a well human being who treats people badly.
No, because just not going to happen. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So in the normal work day, like let's say, because most people work 8 hours a day, Now, if your life and your work is quite hectic and your, not life, let's say just your work, sorry, your work is more hectic and stressful and there's pressures of performing, how can you be aware of or like bring in, embed well-being, I guess, in that kind of 8-hour workday?
Yeah, so a massive part of it is to realize that we only have life. Work is a part of that. And it's not something that you can necessarily try and balance, because that's another illusion that we all chase. Work needs to integrate into your life.
Yes.
And that means you need to design your life to a point, a part around the work that you do. So for someone who's got a particularly stressful job, well, you do have the freedom to change that. But at this particular moment in time, that is the occupation and the place where you are at. So it's really about understanding that there are elements you can't control. That acceptance is vital. But to understand that, we need to embed well-being starts with doing simple things like taking a break, actually having your dinner, and moving away from the stimulation and the inputs and just disconnecting from the world, or connecting with people without the intention to sell them something, to guide them on a project, just to talk open and honestly. And that's massive. That's that little chat next to the coffee machine, that little chat by the water cooler, taking a walk round the block while you eat your sandwiches, and not being at your desk, not being into your phone, and just getting up and taking opportunities to move a little bit more. Again, we're talking little things. Maybe park a little bit further away. Maybe take the stairs. These little opportunities to look. And maybe just, you know, one day a week, switch that afternoon sweet treat for something a bit more sensible. Something that's going to nourish your body a little bit more. And it's well-being is not the sweeping statement, not the big holiday, not the I'm doing these activities. Well-being is making really small choices that look after you. Because the modern world is comfortable, and comfort doesn't breed well-being. It's the antithesis of well-being. We don't want to be comfortable. Our ancestors weren't comfortable. They were not sat on the sofa brushing the crumbs off themselves because they'd eaten another packet of crisps. The reality is that now in a comfortable world, we actually need to produce some discomfort to be well, because that's how we grow. And that bit of uncertainty is what generates well-being, by taking and popping your little toe outside of your comfort zone to stretch yourself that bit a little bit, to scare yourself a little bit. You will treat yourself better, because funnily enough, it's that feeling of fear, that being scared of things, that actually prompts us to action, to change, to make more time for ourselves. And so often it hits crisis before we start looking after our well-being.
Yeah.
That's
a great point. Most people start going, oh, I better start looking after myself now, after you've hit a really, you know, a stressful point. You're like, oh, I'm really like pushing at my maximum here. Do you think though, like a lot of people are unaware of their limits? Well, because we don't know what our human capabilities are. And so we kind of, you know, pushing past your limits, or not pushing past your limits, because I know that's seen as a good thing. Like let's go a bit further, but pushing past your, I'm taking on too much. Like I've got this load. I'm doing more, and I'm always doing more. I'm like, well, you can be doing more and maybe something's going well, like either you through your work, or you're trying to take on other things or work longer hours to get promoted or whatever. But is that in the end worth it? I guess it's like you're outweighing the you know, is it worth it for me to push myself harder than to take care of myself?
Yeah. So I think it's important that we don't always put limits on ourselves, but we be realistic. And if there's anything to come from my own studies and my own understanding, is that we do actually have to push ourselves at times. And again, life is like seasons. We are going to be planting and sowing those seeds at some point, and that's hard work. Those periods probably put more behind it. We need to ensure that we're going to have seasons where we bask in the sun and take a bit of a rest. So they are going to be challenges for people who set up their own business, for people who are going for that promotion where you put that extra push in. But if you still put that extra push in, but still do these little things to look after yourself, what you'll find is you won't hit that ceiling of burnout and find yourself in a really, really difficult place. You'll have that bit of space to reflect and listen to your body and know when you're starting to get a bit too close. And that's the real crux of well-being, is that it all starts with listening to your body, because your body is an amazing feedback loop. It tells you all you need to know. Are you feeling so tired you can't concentrate? You need to look at changing something, either the amount that you're doing, the amount that you're sleeping, what you're eating, how much you're moving, because your body tells you all this information. And the biggest thing about the modern world that we're in is that you become a bit blind and a bit desensitized from what your body's telling you. And if we want to be well, it all starts with listening to your body and just making those small changes and seeing if your body tells you, yeah, that's good for me. That's making me well.
Yeah, I can keep going. It feels good. I guess, yeah, like a lot of people kind of work or allow their mind to drive them instead of kind of listening to every, like their emotions and their body, like you're saying. People aren't connecting the three. And I guess that's when the people are saying your well-being is through meditation and yoga, because it does connect all these different aspects of the body, mind, soul, like emotions, all of these different things. So like if you're somebody who, you know, who doesn't really thrive, you know, work with yoga and meditation and that kind of thing, is there, do you think, other ways of understanding, hey, I've got to, you know, like what's a way of connecting with your body? Like how do you to understand, hang on, this doesn't feel right now?
Yeah, so again, yoga meditation comes in so many different forms. Like quite often people can find a way, but it's more than just what yoga and meditation are. It's why and what they help us achieve. And so often it's reflective practice. It's listening to our bodies. And the biggest thing is switching off. So we suddenly switch off from inputs. And that's possibly the biggest challenge we face to our well-being in the modern world, in that everything's designed for comfort. There's so many things trying to input and stimulate us and put them together, and you end up in comfort, continually stimulated, when to actually achieve well-being, you need to be uncomfortable and not be burnt out from stimulation. So you can develop and choose. And that kind of understanding where yoga and meditation don't work for everyone, but neither did he work straight away. And it's very much a continual process to work on those parts of the mind. You become able to concentrate more. And for some people that doesn't work, but for some people going on a walk does. For some people, journaling their thoughts help them reflect and see. For other people, it's just sitting in silence. And for some people, it's going to their religious practice and praying and suddenly having that freedom of mind. And again, some people have to go and seek solitude and go and stand on a mountain to feel that. And some people have to take themselves so far away from the lives that they live to the other side of the world, to a retreat. That's how deep some people have to go to disconnect, to be able to see more than the very small sliver of life they see in front of their eyes. And again, we don't want it to become where your well-being only becomes a priority when something so significant comes that it causes you such personal crisis that you take the blinkers off. And ultimately, it's that we're kind of looking at. How can we embed well-being into everyday life by doing little things that help us to start to listen to our bodies more, start to be stimulated less, start to become a little bit less comfortable and a little bit less certain. And suddenly we have that little tipping point where things don't always feel as they should be, but that makes us intuitive and want to go and explore and listen to ourselves more, because our body is the biggest gift we've got. Everything, how it's all interconnected, body, mind, the spirit, all together.
Yeah.
And if only we took the steps to begin to understand that, because we're so busy as human beings. Our biggest blind spot is we want to go out into the world and understand everything out in the world, before we've even started to understand ourselves.
Exactly, exactly. That's a great point. You just mentioned something there. It's making me think, like, do you think well-being, like, why we're unable to do that more so nowadays is people are losing they're not able to be tuned in with their intuition. Like, mm-hmm. intuition is well-being. Like, being able to know, hey, this doesn't feel right now. Oh, hang on, I shouldn't make that decision. Oh, wait, I'm getting to a point where, like, truly, like, it's more like when you're saying listening to your body, like, listening to your intuition is what brings about well-being. Yep. In that moment, you get an intuitive, something speaks to you. And yep. there's a lot of people, because now it's such a logic, reasoning kind of driven world, we're not, a lot of people are losing that, they're not really tuned in with their intuition or don't believe in it.
Yeah. So if we look at it, the honest picture is the more cognitively we think about these things, we cloud the actual reality of what our body is telling us. But it's double-sided. So we're becoming less in tune with our intuition, which is the feedback loop, which really gives us all the feedback that we need to shape ourselves to become well human beings. On the other side, you've got modern devices which exploit parts of our intuition and pulls them out to utilize us. So all of a sudden, we're not masters of technology. The technology is the master of us.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of, you know, platforms, apps, and technologies that we use today, they've been designed to hook our psychological elements and utilize them to get us to use those particular apps, services, and platforms. And unfortunately, the reality of that is we are still that 200,000-year-old brain. In fact, it's much older than that. But even considering those humans, that's still us psychologically and physiologically. And now we start to get an understanding of how we can change people's behaviors by exploiting that, by continually bombarding them with certain stimulus and certain hooks and pulling their intuition away from themselves to where they start to form habit loops to do other things. And the more that's exploited, the less people can listen.
Yeah, so it's like the mind is in battle with your intuition. It's like, I'm in control here, not you.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, the circuitry we've got in our minds. It's more complex than anything we'll ever be able to design or anything we can ever imagine. And yet, like anything, it's got vulnerabilities that are being exploited in the modern world. And the truth is, if we look at the antithesis of well-being, the kind of food scientists created hyper-palatable foods that fill our shops, about the air that's, you know, not great in some places, particularly toxic, about the fast fashion, which is, you know, causing all sorts of problems for people's well-being all across the world, from water to pollution to economic development. And all these things just seem to be as is. This is just what is now spread to you. Look, and we'll keep flashing these claws and these food products, and then they try and almost reverse you by saying, well, we'll give you these well-being items and you can feel so much better about life. And what they're really doing is they're trying to get you into a cognitive place where the only thing that you feel you can do is go and buy some well-being and feel better about life. But it all starts in you. And if you unplug from the matrix, so to speak, step back and look at yourself, you'll realize that once again, like so many things, human beings are born with the answers inside of them. They're born with the power to understand themselves. And really, you're born as an experiment to go out and keep experimenting with until the day you die, because every one of us is an individual experiment and your well-being is your own experiment.
Exactly, exactly. That's a great point. That's a great, like, that's exactly it. Like, I've seen, you know, your biggest project that you'll ever work on is yourself. And people don't, like, kind of don't, and forget that. The biggest project you will ever work on is you. And so, like, I think, you know, a big thing that could help in a lot of these ways, and a lot of people talk about it, is, like, as your adult life goes on, you can always take a, like, you know, as best as you can. But like, you know, if you have this opportunity, but you can always take like a gap year. You could do a simpler job. You could go, look, I need a, you know, or even quit your job. It's not helping you. You're not, clearly it's not working for you. And take that year to really, you know, I did that. I was working in a job in my career and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go do another job, but it's going to give me more space in my mind to really narrow in on what is truly important to me.
Yep, it's massive. And I mean, at the moment, I'm designing a course to take to young people who are about to graduate. And what it helps them do is before they go out into the world and join that dynamic and fast-paced environment where all of a sudden all the noise hits and you can't hear yourself, is to define what they want to become and start to help them build a plan, ask them a lot of questions and really get them to define who do they want to become in the longer term and how can they break that down into shorter term goals so that when they go out into the world, they have a defined idea of who they want to be and they don't need to spend 20 years doing things they don't like, they don't enjoy, to gradually chisel that and find it. And yeah, it still takes action, but if you have a little bit of a plan, you can be pre-warned and pre-prepared for what's coming and actually start to think that this is something I can, you know, do in stages. And if I do it like this, I'll be able to listen to myself and that'll be the feedback that I need to shape myself going forward. And I think the biggest thing to take, Tiff, is really when we become adults, all of a sudden we lose all these amazing things that we had as children. Curiosity, yes. Ability to question, the ability to predict situations, and truthfully told, children, they listen to them bodies, they listen to themselves. And what's really beautiful is they fall over and scrape the knee. They don't start crying. They just look at you. They look at your reaction because they are ultimately programmed to become who they are. And yet they have all these elements. Like, children are able to be incredibly well. Children are incredibly resilient. Children are really optimistic and have a lot of hope. And then all of a sudden you hit adulthood and all that's taken away from you.
Yeah.
Well, optimism, hope, curiosity, disruptiveness. Yeah. All traits of someone who's a well human being.
Yeah, we need to just learn from our children, from the children. Yeah, absolutely. I like that course that you're talking about. It's like, you know, instead of us going straight from high school to university, we're in kind of a degree of some sort, or we've chosen majors and minors and all this other stuff. We should kind of go into like a course of nothing. Course of nothing that allows you to just explore for a few years.
Yeah.
And kind of find who you want to be, what you want to be doing. Like, it's like an open ground, a course of nothing.
Yeah, and I think that for so many people, I mean, it used to be things like national service where you'd go and serve in the army in somewhere or some kind of group, and you know that kind of, you'd see maybe what bits of you resonate and what didn't. But really, it's just, education is so, I don't know, education just has lots of issues that compound the fact that education doesn't really teach you to listen to yourself at any point. It doesn't really teach you to ask questions of yourself. It doesn't really teach you to listen. So because of that, it's no surprise that we kind of hit that point and come out of education and we're a bit deaf to the world.
Yeah, and unable to really focus on our well-being. We don't know. We're not, again, like you said, doesn't focus on to listen. You need to listen to you and what you need and feel and to your intuition and be in tune with these things and not let your mind or society kind of get you into, or technology, mind, society, technology, the media, propel you into a downward spiral.
And just one thing to kind of comment on before we break off the air shortly. This course is actually entitled Career GPS because people always want to advance the career. People never seem to want to advance the well-being.
No.
What's more important?
Exactly, exactly. That's a great point. You can advance your well-being. It's not like we said, it's not just this half an hour you put meditation or yoga in throughout your day. Your well-being can always grow. can always expand, and it can also go backwards as well. So it's like be aware of it kind of growing, and really is it developing in your life, or is it going the other way, or is it just short little moments, like little minutes here and there kind of thing?
Yeah, so if you want to ultimately, you know, advance your well-being throughout your life, as you learn, you expand, you become more aware of yourself, you have more acuity to your intuition, then yeah, it's a journey. But you should look to advance it in the same way you advance your career. And actually, it's going to be one of the bigger and more important skills in the future of work, in the future of humanity. So start today and actually think you one day would want to become director of your own self-awareness.
That's a great point. Exactly. That's really well said, and a great ending point now for this episode. Like, as we said, like, your biggest project is yourself. So yeah, that's a fantastic ending there, Lee, and like a great course that you'll be putting out there. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for coming onto the episode again and you know, really like going through this with me and really introspectively analyzing it and being present and able to like have this such in-depth conversation.
Yeah, it's absolutely great to be on again.
Yeah, so great. Well, thank you. Thank you for listening to Get to Know You. If you enjoyed this podcast, rate, review, and share the podcast on Facebook or Instagram. You can tag me at Get to Know You with Tiffany Farag. In my mission to open conversations and access deeper dialogue, I want to hear from you listeners. The question again, how can we embed well-being in all aspects of our life? Leave an audio, video, or a message on the Facebook or Instagram page of your response to today's question, including your name and where you are from. We'll include some different responses in next week's Get to Know You Cafe to further deepen dialogue on this topic. If you have any topics you would like us to discuss, be sure to tag me in a post with your question. Join us every Tuesday on Get to Know You.